right.
Hello.
Hey, Adam.
Evan, how are you?
Very good. This is Mythmakers episode number 41. We are mobile today, actually in the car on our way down to a meeting with our partners at Mammoth Media and Yarn. So heading down to Santa Monica. Can't make the full announcement just yet, but some very exciting stuff brewing with these guys. And so that sort of prompted some of today's conversation. For a little background for anyone that is not familiar with the show, this is a podcast where we talk about storytelling, process, and the people and power that make that stuff.
Yes. A
lot of the time it's about us and stuff. M2 and Macroverse, but we also try to bring in other interesting people as well. So last episode was with Hal Hefner. Fantastic. He you probably know from his Consume series, and we're working with him on something kind of fun as well. Together, Adam and I have over 40 years of experience developing, creating, and delivering content in a wide variety of media. So a little background on us if you're not familiar. And so we're just going to dive right in. We have a previous episode, which I don't remember the number, so you can find it in the archives.
A couple ago,
where we talk about kind of building story and specifically around creating story worlds or sort of the foundation for multiple storylines that can exist in that world. And so a good example of that is our own project, Dead Town, which we've used as the launch series for Macroverse. So our kind of innovative digital comics platform up to episode 8 is on there for free, and you should definitely download it and check that out.
Episode 9 coming soon.
But then we've also got a Dead Town series running on Yarn as well. So season 1 is out right now. We're actually relaunching a slightly revised version of season 1 within the next couple of weeks. With seasons 2, 3, and 4 to follow. And so that's a good example of, we've spent a lot of time kind of figuring out what are the rules of this world? What are the types of characters in this world? What are the types of stories and the tone and the feel and sort of the general kind of different directions that we can push things? And so while the two, kind of the plots of the two series, the Macroverse series versus the Yarn series, are different. They share this sort of foundational thought process and, again, sort of story world that this all exists within. So so that's sort of the notion is, when you're thinking about creating content that can live in more than just one discrete piece, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. There's a lot of great stuff that's like, this is a single story and it's meant to be a single story.
Yes.
But, when you're thinking about sort of the Marvel universe or the DC universe or the Star Wars universe or these sort of bigger playgrounds, then, there's a sort of a different way of approaching, at least we find, how to begin to build the foundation for those kind of myriad of stories. And so,
and I think it is to some degree a difference between, movies can get away with being one-offs better.
Yes.
Whereas TV shows, especially the second you're outside, you're kind of run-of-the-mill, legal, medical, procedural.
Yes.
You better be defining your world out of the gates and quite quickly so that you then know the stories, the type of stories you can tell within it. And I think it's obviously the kind of thing that Marvel particularly has done very well, has approached their movie series as a TV show.
Well, exactly. And it's, it's funny. I think, we've probably said variations on this, and we've certainly heard other people say variations on this, but I think part of what makes what Marvel is doing so effective is that they're able to actually tell a lot of different types of stories, a lot of different tones, a lot of different, blueprints for you. This one's a buddy comedy. This one's a heist movie. This one's a thriller.
Whatever, exactly.
And, be able to balance those various tones while still feeling like they all belong in this larger universe, that they all, fit together.
And create the cast of characters that can then play together, obviously, in multiple arenas.
Exactly. And then, smash together in the best possible way in Infinity War and so forth and so on. So So I think, you know, there's a bunch of different ways to approach it. What we talked about on this, the previous episode where we discussed this, and I think is very much the case as we've been diving into some serious world building over this past week, is, you know, again, sort of looking from the macro to the micro. And so, you know, we pitched this kind of basic concept, got some sign off on it, and then have started to kind of go down this path towards, you know, figuring out and fleshing out kind of the fundamental rules of the universe that we're building.
And then, exactly. And we do, I think we've said before, and Evan just said it as well, obviously, the going from the macro to the micro is the way we, I think, is the way to go.
Yeah.
So because then you're kind of, you're honing in and defining. It doesn't mean that you don't then change things at a small level that have ripple effects up larger again as well. And so, you know, very much hit that this last time and in this kind of latest round of building with the, you know, starting with the basic premise of kind of heaven and hell and what that is, and then actually as we dug into the story of it, redefining those parameters to then be able to do something a little more interesting and more intricate.
Well, and I think, you know, and I think in all of these projects that we've spent a lot of time, you know, kind of world building in, you know, I think there's a common thread there where, you know, it starts with the germ of some ideas. And like with many things, you know, those early ideas are, you know, not necessarily the most original. They're, you know, sometimes, you know, a mashup of things, or, you know, I like this from this and this from, and this from that. And, you know, kind of how do we make those things fit together in a way that's maybe new? And I think in this case in particular, I'm very pleased with where we've ended up, and, you know, we're not going to tell you exactly where that is yet
over the coming months.
But I think we found here, and it's, you know, the way I feel about Dead Town and Crossing Guard and many of our other projects is like where we end up is really feeling like we have a particular point of view or a particular take on this type of idea. And so, you know, again, without specifically saying what it is, you know, it's like we're one of the places that we landed in this round of world building is kind of our take on, you know, why do supernatural events and occurrences happen? What's the fuel for that, so to speak? You know, how does that exist in the world that we know, and why does it exist in the world that we know? And so, you know, those are some of the questions that we were addressing and kind of figuring out particular kind of point of view on.
And that is very much part of it. It is that kind of refining of ideas, so that you're kind of tweaking and tweaking and tweaking to make them genuinely original, as opposed to just another variation of
something we've seen
slight
before.
Variation of something we've seen before.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I find, you know, as we've gone through this process, you know, it's so fresh, which is why we want to kind of talk about it again, that, you know, once those kind of basic questions are answered, once those sort of general rules are in place, then, you know, as we're starting to work our way through the specific plots of these various storylines and characters, you know, kind of figuring out how they fit together, how they intertwine with each other, you know, what starts to happen, and this to me almost feels like, you know, magic on some level, or you could call it, you know, the creative spark or inspiration or whatever, but you start to have that foundation to pull from. And so, you know, what at least how it feels to me is like you get this moment of like, oh, this idea that we had that we were talking about, we didn't know how that was going to work. Now we can now see we how can, it does
exactly.
work. And like, you know, or the reverse, like that doesn't now work. So how do we approach it in a different way, you know, to find a way that does.
And the other fun part is then pulling on as you're honing in on the world and the characters, it is because this kind of, the idea is this kind of multiple intertwining storylines. It's what's been fun is actually going back and pulling out some of the ideas that we had literally years ago.
Yes.
Wait a second, you know what, this idea could work really well in this
world,
and this now fits, and how does that play, and this could actually launch it in this way. And so, you know, we have this kind of, we actually have pretty much everything up online, but we have these kind of, you know, lists of ideas and little books, you know, notes and notes and notes of, oh, random, literally can be random lines of dialogue that we build up.
Yeah.
Or it's log line, this idea, this concept, that anywhere from one sentence to one paragraph that have just been kind of silting up. And every now and then we go and revisit. I think a few times a year I try and go back through and reread those things.
Yes.
It's like, oh, wait, this actually can kind of work. This is appropriate. Yeah. Maybe this one's not so much.
And that's always so fun because actually one of the core building blocks of this series, you know, came from that. And it was, you know, you going like, oh, this ghost story that we had a while ago, and me going, what are you talking about? Like this and this. Oh, yes, that fits perfectly. Yep. So, Yeah, it's, you know, it's, I think that's actually a good takeaway for anyone that's, you know, doing this kind of work, is that, you know, I think there's value kind of on both sides of this. There's value in actually another kind of a recommendation from Seth and Evan,
yeah,
about, you know, sometimes just talking and talking and talking about stuff, and then when you, you know, come back to it, you kind of see what sticks without, yes, taking notes.
Yeah.
And I think there is value to that. But then I also think, you know, for us, you know, we tend to be those people that do tend to jot stuff down.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like I'll often have what I think are some of my best ideas, you know, I think I've said before, either in the shower or on a walk or a run.
Yep.
And, you know, the way I do that now is I just have a little app on my watch and my phone, which just lets me, you know, capture voice records.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's like, and it's so funny because it's like, you know, I think there's, for me, there's like a physiological feeling that comes along with what I at least think is a good idea.
Yes.
So it's like, there's this like, oh my God, I've got, right, this thing. I need to capture
it's like,
it.
Ooh, ooh,
yeah.
Ooh. There's just kind of chimpanzee moment, basically.
It
where
is.
You're like, hi, good. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll do that when we're working together as well.
Yes.
It's always really,
yeah,
funny.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly be like, no, wait, hang on, and you like feel your way into,
yes,
it, and it's,
yes,
and at this point we both know, like, we're like, kind of, whoever is having the moment will be like, the other one is ready to write,
yeah,
the second is like, you know, which is, it's just very funny.
It is, it's very great. Yeah. So yeah, so I think, you know, it's
and I do, oh, to that point, oh, as well, sorry, it actually just rings a bell. There's a book about Don Simpson, who was,
yes,
an uber producer, Bruckheimer's partner from the 80s,
mm,
you know, behind Top Gun and all the, you know, and Michael Bay and et cetera, et cetera. He apparently, in his, when he, you know, he had notebooks full of ideas that,
yes,
he would just write down, and he would revisit them, and then he would, something would happen, he would hear about something, you know, as great producers do, pull that idea out, attach a writer, and go and pitch it.
Yes.
And that, this was just his kind of mine of concepts.
Yeah.
And he was obviously,
yeah,
always very high concept within certain parameters.
Yes.
But as an idea, I always thought that was kind of great.
No, absolutely.
You know?
And I do think we tend to kind of operate that way. It's like, you know, just capture those nuggets, and then,
yes,
you know, revisit them, and sometimes they find
them. And sometimes you spit them back out again.
Absolutely.
But yeah, but it's,
yeah,
Wait, I'm mixing metaphors horribly. But anyway,
yeah, you can spit out a nugget, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
you could, at least.
You could. Yeah, well, if it's, yes, chicken nuggets, you definitely do.
Yes,
so, yeah,
yes,
McDonald's.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And then the other thing which I can mention in this process, which also feels fresh for me, and it's, you know, I think just kind of goes to my personal point of view on writing and, you know, working and developing this kind of stuff. So, you know, I think there's the, you know, this is one of those things where, like, you know, I had that kind of chimpanzee moment. Adam and I talked about it. We came up with this sort of basic kind of umbrella idea, went and literally pitched it the next day, kind of got a, you know, an initial green light based on that pitch, came back and developed a little bit further, went back the next week, kind of fully pitched it, got the green light from there, and then spent the last week kind of developing it.
Right.
So it's all happened very quickly. And what I realized for me is, like, those initial concepts came really fast, and it was that kind of like, oh, this is absolutely what we have to do, and this is how we're going to present it, and this is why this is going to work. And, like, all that kind of coalesced very quickly.
Yes.
And then that first night where we sat down to actually, like, do the work of figuring it out,
right,
I had this, like, internal, I didn't tell you, but I had this, like, internal moment of panic of, like, how are we going to do this? And then, like, everything, it's just taking that first step,
yeah,
and continue working through it. And so that's why, you know, I've come to the feeling for myself, like, you know, the notion of writer's block to me is, like, you know, it's not actually writer's block. It's the, you know, inaction. And, you know, that doesn't mean every idea is good, but it's the way through anything and everything is, you know,
yep,
taking the first step and then taking the next step. And,
yeah,
you know, that actually ties funnily into my morning this morning, where I'm, you know, I'm working with my 5-year-old on how to clean her room. And you can go in there and, like, you know, actually watch her be paralyzed by the amount of stuff that's in front of her to pick up and deal with, because up to that point, she's literally thrown everything out of every container onto the floor. So as a metaphor for life, you know, it's like I can go in with her and, you know, it takes a little patience patience and a little work, but you go in and you go, okay, so you don't have to think about everything. Let's pick one thing. Like, you know, and what I was doing with her this morning is like literally just randomly grab something off the floor and then put that away. And now grab the next thing and put that away. And, you know, it took a little while, but her room got clean.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing in this, you know, kind of development process, or I think actually very much in most areas of life, is just kind of take the next step, take the next step.
Yes.
Especially when things feel daunting, like, how are we going to do this? Now I think we're in a very good place with it. And actually, you know, after today's meeting, we'll be ready to actually start some of the writing and, you know, kind of putting a lot of this together into more fully fleshed out format.
Yep. The other thing I do find helps as well, and we've certainly been doing this, we have done it periodically, but it's just the physical activity.
Yes.
And so it's like, as we've been writing this last time, we'll go to and fro, but sometimes it's you pacing the room and me taking notes. Sometimes it's me pacing the room and you taking notes. This last period, actually, we've had, like, my practice, my daughter actually has a set of practice, like, rubber nunchucks. And so we've been kind of whizzing those around as we're talking. Yeah. And there's something about that repetitive kind of physical activity that just keeps spurring the activity.
It is.
Keeps spurring the mental process.
I think there's some brain science and study around some of this stuff where, you know, I think for me it's why, like, so many of my... especially over the past couple of years, as we've been doing a lot more writing, like, I feel like the problem solving for me especially happens often in some sort of activity. Mm. So I've definitely found, like, going on runs with, like, you know, oh, I'm stuck in this part of this script and I don't know how to solve this problem. Like, let me just put it aside for a minute and go for a run. And, you know, like, just almost letting that percolate in my mind, and it's just like, boom, there's the solution.
Right.
Like, I got it, you know?
Yep.
And I do think, you know, I could be totally speaking out of my ass right now, but I think there is some, you know, kind of study in brain science around the kind of problem solving that your brain has.
That sounds familiar.
By kind of like planting the seed and then letting it kind of run its program. We're just getting to our destination, but we're going to keep talking for a couple more minutes. So I think that's a little bit more on world building and, you know, kind of story building, story world building. Actually, just going to pause for 1 second while we park, and then we will continue. So, dun, 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 more to come. All right, we are parked.
We're here. We're looking out over, actually, beautiful. Ah, hold on a second.
Beautiful Santa Monica.
Beautiful sunny Santa Monica. We see in the background. There are palm trees waving.
This is called Southern California, my friend.
Exactly.
It's very good.
This is very nice.
So speaking of story worlds and where things can go off the rails, we also saw Solo recently.
Oh, boy.
And while Hal did his review,
I think that is my
beautiful
flip of the week, because it was... It's not catastrophically bad, but it's pretty bad.
Well, here's my problem with it. I have a hard time, and now I will once again acknowledge myself as the Star Wars apologist in this car.
Yes.
My problem with it was, it's not even to me that it's bad. It's that I think it's actually a perfectly fine movie. It's just it doesn't do anything.
Right.
So it's sort of, more than anything for me, it has no reason to exist.
Yes.
And I think fundamentally, and it took a little thinking about this for me to come to it. So, by the way, massive spoiler alerts coming up. So if you haven't seen Solo and you don't want it spoiled,
Having said that, if you haven't seen Solo yet, you're joining the rest of the country and the world in not seeing Solo, because
this
it's
is
falling
true.
Off a cliff
this
in
is
terms
the,
of attendance.
This is the first Star Wars flop. Sorry, guys. But I think there's actually a big reason for that. So I think, you know, a lot of people, I do not believe in franchise fatigue. I think if things are great, like Marvel has proven.
Look at Bond.
Yeah. Like, well, or look at Marvel in particular. Like, we will watch 4 Marvel movies a year happily when they're good.
3 Marvel movies in 6 months.
That's right.
Sorry, 5
months. Yes. And we're perfectly fine with that because
they're
all fun.
And 2 of them have crossed well over $1 billion.
That's right. So I don't buy the too much Star Wars. I think that is a weird Hollywood thing that, mm-hmm. you know, people point to when things haven't gone the way they wanted yep. them to, instead of the quality of the content.
Exactly.
So, you know, here's the thing with Solo. Like, I think the performances are fine. The characters are fine. Like, I was actually very pleasantly surprised with Alan Ehrenreich mm-hmm. as Han Solo, but they didn't give him anything interesting to do. They didn't give Lando anything interesting to do. Like, no. Donald Glover is wonderful. He just doesn't have anything interesting to do.
He has nothing to do. Emilia Clarke yeah. is the only one who has any spark, and even yes. she is kind of a pale imitation of Daenerys.
Absolutely.
Yep. Which
and,
is annoying.
And I also, you know, in further reflection, which we didn't really talk about, even her character, you know, it's strange that so many of the characters feel so one note.
Yes.
When they're telling a what's supposed to be kind of interesting, twisty, turvy,
right.
you know, crime riddled section of the galaxy yes. movie. You know, one of my problems is I felt like, you know, in this area of the universe where we're dealing with scoundrels and crooks and thieves, everyone's sort of a good guy.
Yes.
Even the bad guys.
Exactly.
So that's a problem. And then my biggest problem is, you know, we basically destroy Han Solo's character in this movie.
Right.
Because what we establish in Solo is that he's always been a good guy.
Right.
He will always be a good guy. He will always do the right thing. And so much of what makes Han Solo an interesting character and really the fundamental turn in A New Hope.
Exactly. Is his showing up at the end and saving the day when
yes.
you expect him to have gone.
Exactly. So here's this scruffy looking nerf herder that's supposed to, you know, be this scoundrel that you don't know whether he's going to, you know, bail or not. In fact, you think he has bailed. And it's the big surprise at the end of A New Hope that he comes back and saves Luke and basically allows Luke to blow up the Death Star. So that only happens as a moment of surprise in that movie because you don't know what right. this character is going to do.
Because up until that point, he has been completely yeah. mercenary.
Exactly. And, you know, so, you know, he has the you know, the talking about smuggling stuff in the ship and, like, kind yeah. of being involved in the underworld and owing money to Jabba and shooting Greedo first, goddammit.
Yes, exactly. That was one of the parts where they got it right.
Yes. But you know, it's like that to me is what makes, you know, also makes Han the counterpoint to Luke. And what they kind of did in Solo is they kind of made him Luke.
It's like he's not even kind of. It's, yeah.
He's the hooker with the heart of gold in this
yeah.
movie. And that's a problem from a franchise perspective in that you then eliminate that kind of surprise in his character and you also kind of water down his character. So, you know, making him this sort of love struck puppy
yeah.
that, you know, wants to save his girlfriend above all else, you know, doesn't make for a very interesting story when
no.
you're trying to set up this scoundrel that we meet in episode 4. And after giving a lot of thought, like, here's how I would have solved this movie, is you actually go completely the other way. Like, if we're going to see a Solo backstory, give us something really surprising. Like, make him a bad guy,
right?
You know,
exactly.
or right at the border of being a bad guy,
yep.
completely mercenary,
make
completely
him genuinely amoral.
You know, completely immoral. And so it's only his interaction with the rebellion and Luke and Leia that brings him to being a good guy.
Yes.
Whereas, as it stands now, he's a good guy
and he's responsible for the rebellion,
which is also ridiculous,
really irritating.
And this is one thing which I, above all else. This is my biggest problem with Solo, and it's really my biggest problem with franchise storytelling in general. And I think Star Wars is actually more guilty of it than most.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is the desire to connect
everything together. So Anakin created C-3PO.
Yes. Unnecessary.
What? Totally stupid.
And stupid. And in this case, Han Solo is responsible for the money which allows the rebellion
right.
to get off the ground. And what's also weird is that's in the timeline here. I mean, where are we? We're like maybe 5 years away from A New
yeah,
Hope
exactly.
at the most.
Which means the rebellion's been going.
Yeah. Which
already.
Well, but they've essentially established in Solo that they haven't been. Like, there
right.
are people that want to start this rebellion. They don't have the money for it. And now Solo provides the money for it. And then essentially is responsible for the rebellion, which he then shows up to be a part of. It's very convoluted and very odd and completely
unnecessary.
There was no reason that had to happen.
Yes.
You could have had this exact same story with all its flaws
yep.
without that
right.
being a plot point.
Exactly.
I mean, it's
I think
silly.
There's also something more fundamental than that, and I think, and unless it's solved very cleverly,
yeah.
is the fact that there is, in any of these action sequences, there is zero jeopardy
mm-hmm.
because you know Han and Chewie survive.
Yes.
So Han's hanging off a ship. Oh, my God, there's
yep.
there's a boulder coming up that's going to squash him. Is he going to be okay? Well, yeah, because there are Five more movies about it. Oh my God, Chewie's dangling off a cliff about to be squashed by a boulder. Is he? Yeah.
Yes.
We know he is.
Yes.
And that, there's an inherent flaw in that, because there's no, if there's no jeopardy for the hero,
yes,
then it means you've got to do a really good job of creating jeopardy around the other people.
Yes.
Which means, actually then, that's where you need to spend your time so that you as the audience become emotionally invested in their success or lack thereof.
Yep.
And their interactions together. Whereas if you're just trying to make this the hero story about a hero who you know is a hero and it just
and
runs
stays a hero.
Out and stays a hero, it just runs out of point.
Yeah, exactly. And that's again, I mean, the whole thing just feels unnecessary to me. It also speaks to, I think, another thing that I feel like a lot of franchises get wrong. And again, I think Star Wars is more guilty of than many, in that you're showing, and it's very much in the prequels too, you're showing us the history of something that we don't need to see the history of.
Yep.
Like, there's much more interesting places to explore in the Star Wars universe, and it's what does make me excited about what Rian Johnson may potentially do with his new trilogy, or where
the
Game of
Thrones
guys will do
often, exactly.
with their new trilogy. It's like, show us parts of this universe that we haven't seen before.
Or what they did effectively with Rogue One.
Absolutely.
Which was, here's this interesting snapshot of an event that we know happens, but we don't know any details of.
That's right.
And tell that story, extrapolate that.
Yes.
And then you can have all the little threads and ties that you want to, and it's fresh and great.
And I love Rogue One. I think Rogue One worked beautifully, and I think, actually, you're right, there's a fine line there in that what they did with Rogue One was they gave us a part of the backstory that felt additive and interesting.
Exactly.
And because we were introducing new characters, had real stakes. Like, we didn't know what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't know how we were going to get
bloody
there.
Die,
and they all died, which is
great.
Exactly. Whereas with Solo, I think, you know, there's actually more fun to me from a fan perspective of not knowing the details about the Kessel Run, not knowing the details about how exactly he won the ship from Lando. Like, you know, I thought, like, the relationship
I avoided a giant space squid.
Yes. That's how I made it in 12 parsecs. So, you know, it's like it's more powerful to see other characters' reaction to that. Oh, you're the guy that did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. Yeah. Like, that actually has more impact than us actually seeing what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seeing it through the eyes of other characters and how impressive that is, or how, you know, how much that makes him a sort of mythic pilot.
Yes.
You know, and so I think those are moments where I think you have to be careful as a storyteller. And I, you know, I really like Lawrence Kasdan's work in general, and I think he's a phenomenal screenwriter, I feel like this is a bit of a whiff.
This was not good.
You know, kind of across the board. So there's a Solo review.
Yep.
And as it ties into world building, I just think, you know, step carefully with your prequels.
Exactly. Exactly.
You listening, Kathy? Talk to us.
Yes.
So I think that wraps up this week's episode.
I think so.
That's your Hoojima Flip for the week.
That was my Hoojima Flip.
My Hoojima Flip, quickly, is I am a unabashed Apple fanboy, and this past Monday was WWDC, which is the developers conference, and WWDC is the annual pilgrimage to new software. So as an early adopter, I am currently running the iOS 12 betas on everything, and Apple Watch 5 and all that stuff. So trying out all those bells and whistles, and also happily being able to report that Macroverse works flawlessly in iOS 12. Very good as well. But lots of nice little tweaks and additions to the software. And I think, you know, one thing I do always appreciate about what Apple does is, for the most part, you know, the tweaks are definitely kind of user oriented. So you can tell that they're kind of paying attention to, like, where do things get frustrating, or how do you make the experience more seamless, or, you know, feel more fluid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I appreciate all that and kind of geek out on it. So that's my Hoojima Flip this week. As always, you can follow us everywhere on social media.
At
M2Action on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're mostly on Instagram these days, but still Facebook to a degree, and very less so on Twitter.
Yep.
We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the stuff that we're up to, which is also at M2Action. By all means, go download Macroverse.
And let us know what you think.
Let us know what you think.
Stuff.
So Macroverse is our vision for the future of comics. Our launch series, Dead Town, which we talked about, is up there. Episodes 1-8 are live and available for free at the moment. So we really love your feedback, really love your thoughts on everything that we're doing. There's even a link in the sidebar on the app to give us those thoughts. thoughts and feedback. Of course, ratings and reviews also help us tremendously.
Ratings and reviews are very much welcome.
Both for Macroverse and for this show also helps people find it.
That is true.
And so we will be back next week.
Next week.
Have a great week.
Probably truncated. Okay.
Exactly. Bye. Bye.